You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Can the capitalist system, in which all too often only the rich get richer, also be used to lift the poor out of poverty? Well, Muhammad Yunus's solution to that question involves micro-lending to the poor. It's been adapted around the world, and in 2006 it led to his being awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. Professor Yunus's latest book, Creating a World Without Poverty, Social Business and the Future of Capitalism, is published by Public Affairs, and I'm pleased it has brought him to the show today. Hello.
Hi. Glad to be here.
What's the objective of a traditional business as opposed to the social businesses that you have created?
The traditional or only existing business that we know in the framework of capitalist system is business to make money. So profit maximization is the goal of a business. That's how we have been taught, that's how we practice, that's how we build the whole capitalist world. And to me, it kind of puts in a very narrow way of human being as an interpretation. Human beings are not a single-dimensional entity. Human being is a multidimensional entity. Making money is one dimension of human being, but you cannot build a whole theory out of that. So I'm suggesting that there should be at least one more type of business which will take care of the other dimensions of human being, reach out to people, change the world, make a difference, solve the problems that are around us. Those are businesses which I call social businesses. These are aimed at social goals, non-loss, non-dividend company. The conventional businesses, the business that we know, profit-maximizing companies, are all about me. I want to benefit everything about me. But the social business is about others, nothing about me.
Up until now, the alternative to traditional business was socialism. But this is not socialism.
This is not socialism. Socialism is about the government. You give all the authority to the government to take care of the economy, and they will tell you how much you will earn, how much you save, how much you do. This is not socialism. This is talking about individual choices. I'm suggesting social business. I'm not saying everybody should do a social business. I'm saying if this idea existed within the framework, many people probably would have liked the idea and do that. Instead of going into charity, which we do now, we create foundations, we create charitable programs where we give our money, we give our income, give our wealth to achieve some social goal. If you compare the social business and charity, charity dollar has only one life. You can use it only once, and then it's gone, and you have to bring fresh money to repeat it. If you can convert the same thing into a social business dollar has endless life. You can continue to reuse it because it recycles. It comes back to you, and you reach much more, and you create institutions, enterprises, which you can bring your own ability, your creativity into it, and adjust it to the new technology and reach out to more people.
So the goal of a social business, unlike a charity, is full cost recovery.
Full cost recovery. That's the whole idea.
How do social businesses differ from the concept of social entrepreneurship, which is taught in some U.S. business schools?
Social entrepreneurship is a more broad concept. Anything, anybody takes an initiative to help other people, they can be recognized as social entrepreneurs. A businessman who makes lots of profit can be a social entrepreneur because he contributed something new in bringing to the society. So he's a social entrepreneur. A charitable organization creator who has created a wonderful healthcare program, but as a charity program, he's also a social entrepreneur.
So, the NGOs.
NGOs are also, many of the NGOs are social entrepreneurs. They want to address certain issues. So it has a big spectrum from the ultimate charity to ultimate profit maximization. I'm suggesting that it's one kind of business where entire focus is on achieving social goal, but at the same time, full cost recovery.
And you say there are two types of social businesses. What are they?
Two types is one that I just said about the non-loss, non-dividend company. Another one is something which is a profit-maximizing company, but entirely owned by poor people. So this company is changing the life of the poor people. In that sense, it's a social business.
So the real issue for both of the for that kind of business is getting the funding for it, getting it started.
Yeah.
Because people and banks and other money lending institutions are not all that thrilled about giving money to poor people.
No, if you say give money to poor people, nobody will be thrilled in that sense because it sounds the ring of a charity, give away. But the moment you say that in my neighborhood, I can overcome the unemployment in my neighborhood, provided I can create a social business company where you invest, and that company helps people get out of unemployment, and your money is retained, you can take your money back, but you don't get any monetary return out of it. People will say, okay, I'll do that. I don't like people to hang around unemployed in my block. So people would like to do that. People has wonderful feeling for other people, which they do not get a chance in a capitalist system, the way interpretation has been made, to express themselves. So they have to step outside that system and be a philanthropist, be a charitable donor or something like that. People spend a lot of money, give away a lot of money in charities and foundations and so on. So I'm suggesting that they, probably a idea of social business will help even improve that charitable exercise, which we do. At the same time, we can express it within a business framework. Then we can use the business techniques, like we can have a separate social stock market. This stock market is about making money. You try to find out which company will give you the best return that you can think of. Social stock market will be listing all the social business companies. You want to find out which company is changing the world and helping poor people get out of poverty, or bringing beautiful healthcare program to the poorest person possible in a business way. I can put my $1,000, my $500 into that one, and I'll feel very happy with that.
But there's nothing like that right now.
Right now, there's nothing.
Are any social businesses on the regular stock markets?
Not yet. Not yet, because the whole concept I'm developing and I'm presenting it to you now, to your listeners and to the general public through this book, which hopefully people will review and say, yeah, this is a great idea. Or they'll say, this is a lousy idea, it won't work. Whichever way, I'm just presenting as an option.
My guest is Muhammad Yunus, Y-U-N-U-S. His latest book, Creating a World Without Poverty, Social Business and the Future of Capitalism, is published by Public Affairs. Are the social businesses things you'd expect only to prosper in the global south where poverty is most acute?
It can work everywhere. It can work in south. It can work in the north. Because if you look at in the United States, if you see the problems that you can count on your fingers, like welfare. Why should people remain in welfare for year after year? Why can't we take them out of welfare, put them into full shape as a dignified person taking care of themselves? This could be a social business to help them come out of welfare. And look at millions of people who cannot open a bank account in the United States. As a result, if they get a check from their employer or from the government, they have to go to check cashing companies because no bank will let them have that facility. And check cashing companies take advantage of the situation and make money more than what they deserve. So we can create a social business to let people open bank accounts, let people have their check cashing facilities and so on and so forth. There are lots of pawn shops, there are lots of payday loans and all those things. These are all subjects of good social businesses.
Why do you think so many people believe that the free market system as it is works perfectly well when you are so concerned with coming up with an alternative?
Well, people are concerned that free market system is not working properly. That's what the whole concern about. That's why we debate, discuss, and that's why the whole presidential debate is going on in the primaries, where things have gone wrong, where the state has to play a more a strong role because system is not working. The moment you talk about state should come and solve it, that means the system that we designed didn't work out the way it should have. So once we include this idea of social business as a separate window into a business world, this would address many of the problems that we are now talking about giving it to the government.
Do you think you would have come up with these ideas if you hadn't come to the United States when you were younger? How old were you when you came here?
When I came, I was 25.
And what reason, what brought
you
here?
I got the Fulbright Scholarship to study economics in this country. There was a competition like any other country. They have of students who would like to receive the Fulbright scholarship, and I competed and I got the scholarship. And I came to this country, did my PhD in Vanderbilt University, Nashville, Tennessee.
And many people stay. They vow to go back home and apply what they've learned, but they stay. But
it's
you
so
did
attractive.
Go back to Bangladesh.
The country is so attractive there, and opportunities are so much. The people love to stay here. And also the lack of opportunity is so dramatic in, when you go back. So people feel discouraged to go back. In my case, I feel very strongly motivated to go back because I always felt that I'm spending time just waiting for my time to go back. To be a participant in the whole changes in the society, whichever way I can make a contribution.
And did you feel that the economic theories that you'd learned in school were applicable to the problems facing the millions of impoverished people in Bangladesh?
You feel overwhelmed. Suddenly you see that the theory in the book is one thing. On a blackboard, you can solve lots of problems. But when you come to the real people, this is not the way it exactly works out. And lots of things is beyond your control. Even if you have a bright idea to do that, you say government should have done this, you should have this, you have done that. That's not the way you can do it. You are not the sole authority in the whole country. You can dictate everybody to do whatever they want. So you feel powerless, hopeless, and you get frustrated with yourself. And then in a situation like in Bangladesh, when I came back, the famine of 1974, where hundreds of thousands of people were dying of hunger, that doesn't present you a very encouraging picture to hang on to your theories and so on.
Let's take a little break, and when we come back, we'll talk about Sufia Begum and how important she was to your development. Mohammed Yunus's book is Creating a World Without Poverty, Social Business, and the Future of Capitalism, published by Public Affairs. Stay with us. We're back with Nobel Peace Prize winner Mohammed Yunus. His latest book, Creating a World Without Poverty, Social Business, and the Future of Capitalism, which is published by Public Affairs. Tell me about Sufia Begum.
Yeah, when I was teaching economics in the university and I was frustrated about what's happening in Bangladesh with the famine and so on.
You'd gone back to your hometown, Chittagong?
I have gone back to my hometown, Chittagong, and I joined Chittagong University as a teacher. And I was the department head of economics department. And the famine and then frustrations that took over. I was trying to see if I can do something as a person, not as an economist, because I don't know how to apply these things anymore. As a person, I thought I can be next to another human being and be useful to another person. So I was doing little things next door in the university, next door to the university campus in a village where people lived. So I would go around and meet people. And one of those trips, I met this absolutely poor women making bamboo stool. And I was, the contrast that attracted me, the contrast between what she's wearing, the thatch or something, very poor clothing in her body, and literally rags she's wearing, and then beautiful stool she's making, and look bright, new, shining things. And I thought, why is she so poor if she's making all those things? And I stopped and tried to talk to her. It's not easy to talk to a woman in a village. She gets scared, why am I talking to a stranger? So I tried to encourage her and finally established some kind of rapport. She explained to me why she makes so little. She said she makes only 2 penny a day. I couldn't believe she'd understood what it meant. And I tried to write down every penny of her calculations, so how much money you make of this, how much money your price is, how much you get. And in my calculation, I end up with the same results, 2 penny a day. And then she explained why it's so, because she doesn't have the money to buy the bamboo that goes into the bamboo product. So she had to borrow the money from the trader with the condition that she has to sell everything she makes to him only. And the price has to be decided by him. So that is the catch.
And then you learned also that this situation was endemic of the whole village that she was working in. Was this an example of capitalism at its worst or something much older and more feudal?
I would say this is a failure of the capitalism, not the nature.
But she was really selling to the company store.
She's selling to the company store, and company decides what you can do. That means there is no competition. There is no institution which would save her, could come forward. So that's a missing link in the whole thing. That's why you have the payday loans. That's why you have the check cashing companies. The same thing. It's something is missing in the whole, despite the fact this is New York City. This is the capital of capitalism itself. But still, there are things that doesn't work out properly.
But doesn't capitalism require an impoverished underclass to work? That's what.
No, not necessarily. I would say capitalism works much better if everybody has a purchasing power. Suppose all these people that we keep referring to, that 1.2 billion people under a dollar a day situation, that extremely poor and so on, if they could earn $5 a day, for example, they would be very different. They would be buying shoes, they would be buying shirts, they would be buying food. Everybody who's selling shoes, now you have to sell 1.2 billion extra shoes because they were buying shoes. Similarly, clothes, similarly, cosmetics, similarly, whatever you are a human being consumes. So it will be a thriving economy for the whole world.
But, Professor Yunus, we keep on hearing about Western companies moving their sources from place to place because now China with a growing economy, salaries are going up. It becomes too expensive to get those sneakers for $3 a piece. And so they're moving to Vietnam or they're moving
to Bangladesh
because they can keep
their
costs down.
Cheap labor. That's globalization. And Bangladesh benefits from it. Vietnam benefits from it. Bangladesh doesn't complain that, look, they're bringing it to us because we are cheap. After we work for you in cheap labor, we become expensive over time because now we have enough and you can't buy us as cheap as possible.
But then there's another place that will work cheaper than
you. Probably. Soon you'll be exhausting the whole world. And then you go to the next level of wages so that you have to produce those things. People are asking for it. So I don't see anything wrong with that. There are certain things wrong in the globalization, but not this one. This one creates jobs. Poverty declines, we get into a middle-class situation. That is a wonderful thing to happen.
Well, how did you break the system that had people like Sophia Begum trapped?
So I came up with my idea of lending money to them, which banks will not lend money to. I tried to convince the banks to lend the money. Bank doesn't do that. I made a list of such people in the village, and when my list was complete, there were 42 names on my list, and the total money they borrowed was $27. So I said, my God, people suffer so much for so little. So I wanted to solve that problem by giving this money to them and say, return the money to the loan sharks and be yourself and be free. And they were very happy to have made that happen. And then I want to do more of it. I thought if you can make so many people so happy with such a small amount of money, why shouldn't you do more of it?
But so you couldn't do it all out of your own pocket.
I could have done much more, but I thought if I want to do it, I should find a way which will proceed according to its own principles. I don't have to intervene every time they need money. So I went to the bank. I thought bank should lend the money. And bank said, no, they cannot do that. That's the struggle began. Then I offered myself as a guarantor to solve that problem. And I became a guarantor. I signed all their papers, take the money from the bank and give it to people and encourage them to pay back. And it worked.
So that's where you created the Grameen Bank?
That's how the Grameen Bank was created.
And that all involves the concept of micro-lending.
That's what, at that time, the word microcredit didn't exist. So once people started describing what we're doing, they started describing it as microcredit.
How much, what percentage of the loans that you distributed was paid back?
Always very high, 98%, 99%. Not only it works with Grameen Bank or Bangladesh, it works all over the world. And everywhere the repayment rate is very high. And it's interesting to notice that our work doesn't depend on any collateral. So we dispensed with collateral. We said we don't need any collateral, no guarantee. And no lawyers. We don't have any lawyers in our system. But still it works.
Because people are grateful.
People are grateful also. They want to protect the privilege that they have. This is very important for them. If they don't pay back, then the door gets closed for them.
Isn't this the sort of thing that the World Bank was created to do?
That's what we keep reminding them. they still don't come around support microcredit.
What do they do wrong? Because you're very critical of
them. I'm critical of them because I said they keep reminding us that this is what they're supposed to do. I said, we are not doing that. They said their way of doing this is to create a booming economy, high growth economy. So if the growth goes on and the poor people will be coming out of poverty. I said, well, growth is going on in China, but still there are a lot of poor people. So that doesn't mean that something to growth will solve everything. If that have done, we wouldn't have so much income disparity in fast-growing economies. So you need to have something to help the bottom people lift themselves up.
And that's why you created these incentive systems.
Yeah, that's right, yes.
You invoke the word apartheid when you discuss the ways that poor people are kept out of the financial system.
Yes, because I thought this is very unreasonable, very unjust, because for no fault of their own, they said you are not creditworthy. They made a declaration, almost like build a wall, that you cannot cross this wall to our wall, and that wall is a collateral wall. And they insisted that you cannot do banking without collateral, so you stay that way, we stay this way. And we can go on increasing our wealth repeatedly as each cycle, and you still continue to repeat the same poverty cycle and stay there.
Well, we're seeing a growing gap between rich and poor in this country. Sure. So is this something that is not just a third world problem?
No, it's everywhere. That's what I'm saying. Capitalism is missing something. It cannot come and we say this is something, well, you have to adjust it. Not everything can be cured by this. So that's not a good good explanation. We can amend the whole system in a way. It addresses, it is part of the system itself.
My guest is Muhammad Yunus, whose latest book is Creating a World Without Poverty, Social Business and the Future of Capitalism. The book is published by Public Affairs. Well, to some degree, isn't this this problem also because many consider the poor to be responsible for their own problem?
Yes, this is another way. This is just to shrug off your responsibility so that if it is their responsibility, I'm free. But repeatedly, as you go on and look at the poor people and understand them, you find out there's nothing wrong with the poor people. They're as energetic, as creative, as productive as anybody else. Poverty is not their creation. Poverty is created by the system that we created. And we have to address the system. Fix the system so that the poverty disappears.
But poor people usually are seen as only recipients of help, unable to help themselves. Now, what do you think about programs like food stamps?
Food stamps, welfare, this is how only reaction that we have, only program we could create for the poor people. You are not addressing their creativity. You are simply keeping them alive. So they remain alive without any creativity.
But in this country, more and more, we're seeing government policies that force poor people to work. In the past, they could receive welfare and that was it. But now they're asked to get work training or work at, unfortunately, all too often, menial jobs. Is that a beginning?
It should be a beginning because people should not be sitting there and without any initiative on their own. The idea of welfare should be very clearly marked what the objective is. Objective of welfare is to help people get out of welfare. That should be the prime objective of welfare, not keeping them in welfare. If you keep them in welfare, you actually create a sort of a human zoo. You keep them there, healthy, fed, and so on, but they're not performing their real human work. This is what they are supposed to, and they feel fulfilled when they can take care of themselves. So you have to open
because you
up.
Say you have to give them self-confidence.
Yes, absolutely. They have to. You have to give self-confidence. You have to create enabling environment for them so that microcredit type of thing, information technology, so that they can change their own world.
Now, you base the Grameen Bank concept on people's poverty. How do you define poverty? I mean, is there some kind of a U.S. dollar per person that...
There are many ways it has been described. But to me, poverty is a kind of life which you repeat endlessly without any hope, without any dream, because nothing happens in your life. Also, if you can look at the physical indicators of it, you live in a squalor, you live in a house which is a leaky roof, it's not no furniture inside of your house, no amenities of any kind, any electricity or any sanitation facilities and so on. It's worse than animal life. It's the way you're uncertain. You don't know where the next meal is coming from. Nothing is under your control. You are a victim of everybody's decisions, everybody's wishes, and you are the end person in the whole system.
How many Bangladeshis have received Grameen Bank loans since it was created?
Grameen Bank is like a club. You keep on joining and adding and so on. So as you keep on adding, and along the way some also leave Grameen Bank, today we have 7.5 million borrowers. 97% are women. And they own the bank, and they take loans and create income-generating activity to help themselves out of poverty.
And then you took that experience running the Grameen Bank eventually to launch a series of companies. That wasn't your intention at the start.
No, it was not our intention. And also, we didn't use Grameen Bank's money to create other companies. Each company was created independently without any help from Grameen Bank.
So you have Grameen Phone.
We have Grameen Phone. We have Grameen Telecom. We have Grameen Information Technology. We have Grameen Communication. We have some 26 companies like that.
You're making yogurt as well.
We make it. It was a Grameen Danone company, which is a social business company, making yogurt for the malnourished children of Bangladesh so that they can eat this yogurt, which is fortified yogurt with the vitamin, iron, and zinc, and all the things that they're missing in the malnourished children so that they can regain their health.
So how does a social business begin? Is it Does it start with the same kind of entrepreneurship that we know here in this country?
One has to come up with a bright idea.
Not you necessarily.
Not me necessarily. It could be anybody. And it is a concept of an idea, business. A social business is basically an idea, a business which is aiming at a social objective. It could be helping poor people out of poverty. It could be microcredit. It could be a healthcare program. It could be sanitation program. You name it, or a safe drinking water program. Whatever you see, you have a social problem. You address that in a social business.
Aren't these companies at a disadvantage because they're competing with traditional profit-maximizing businesses on the free market?
It will have its own challenges. That doesn't mean that it will discourage us, because after all, you're not going to make any money, so your advantage is on your side. The other company, profit-making company, has to make profit and compete with you. So you are in advantage that you don't have to make profit. All you have to do, achieve the social goal.
And what happens if you do make a profit, whether you want to or not? And
then profit stays with the company.
Uh-huh.
No, there's nothing wrong with making profit by the company. All we are saying that the investor, the creator of the company, the owner of the company, will never take any profit out of that. It stays with the company. Company expands to reach out the goal, because the entire objective of the company is to help solve the problem that they have focused on.
The majority of recipients of microloans from the Grameen Bank are women. Why
yes.
is that?
Well, this came from our controversy with the conventional banks. With the conventional banks, I was pointing out that not only it rejects poor people in their own operation, it also rejects women of all kinds, even the rich woman. If you look at the, I tried to show to them that if you look at the borrowers of your bank, not even 1% of your borrowers happen to be women. So there must be something wrong with you. So when I began, I wanted to make sure half the borrowers in my program are women. That's what I was concentrating on. When I achieved that, it was a difficult task, but I achieved that. I saw money going to the family through women brought more benefit to the family compared to the benefit that came from a loan to the men.
Now, are you charging interest rates?
Oh, yes. You had to be self-sustaining. Otherwise,
what level? How much of an interest rate?
Conventional banks in Bangladesh, interest rate would be something like 16% on a quarterly compounding. Grameen Bank's highest interest rate is 20%, simple interest rate. And then we have the next interest rate, which is 8% for housing loan. And then we have 5% interest for student loan. And 0% interest rate for beggars. We also lend money to beggars. So if you kind of take the weighted average of our interest rate, all four of them, it will be something like 18.5%, so which is slightly above 16%. But 16% compounded and 18.5% simple interest rate is not too far away from each other.
You also have social goals as part of this. When someone signs up for credit at the Grameen Bank, they're asked to pledge to follow the 16 decisions. And one of those decisions is we shall pledge to keep our family small.
That's right.
In a country like Bangladesh where the birth rate is so high,
yes,
that's an important thing.
That's very important thing indeed. Bangladesh population growth rate was very high. It used to be 3.3%. Now declined very sharply. Now it is 1.4%. Came all the way down.
Do you think that global businesses have any reason to tackle social problems?
They should. After all, they operate in the global platform. Well,
but they could just simply pack their bags and move on to another country.
Exactly, go to other country. This is the problem with the profit-maximizing company. They have no obligation within the system of profit maximization because you have to give your shareholders the best return. So they're always busy to make sure in the stock market they look good. In the newspapers, they look good. They're doing wonderful. They're robust in economic sense.
In fact, often a company lays off workers and their stock price goes up.
Yeah.
A listener from Queens wants to know if people from the United States can give contributions to help the Grameen Bank.
Grameen Bank itself doesn't need any contribution, but there are many microcredit programs who needs it. We can receive it and pass it on to other microcredit programs around the world.
You mean the other ones that have followed your model?
Followed our model around the world in many, many countries. But Grameen Bank itself has plenty of money for itself because it generates money through taking deposits. So it's no end of that money.
I want to thank you so much for being with
us
today.
Thank you.
Mohammed Younis, no longer teaching at the university, but running the Grameen Bank and the other Grameen businesses. His latest book is called Creating a World Without Poverty, Social Business and the Future of Capitalism. It is published by Public Affairs. It's been a real pleasure talking with you.
It's a pleasure for me. Thank you so much.